And now, I'd like to show my love by making for you a Quebec pizza.
What's that?
Pop-Tart with the ketchup. She's good.
Daniel Parmack, San Antonio, Texas.
Hey, Doc, we better back up. We don't have enough roads to get up to 88.
Roads? Well, we're going. We don't need roads.
La-la-la-la.
It's showtime.
This is Old School at the Movies, episode
144 for April 18th, 2016.
Old School at the Movies is brought to you by the brand new TrendingTopicsNetwork.com. Check out some great shows like the European Uppercut, Anything Goes, and the Ohio Valley and the Report. Welcome back to Old School at the Movies, your one-stop shop for all your movie-related news. I'm your host, Mr. Old School. Before we get to the panel this week, let's get into the contact information. OldSchoolMovies.net is a site we can listen, download, and subscribe to the podcast. If you want to get in touch with us directly, don't be shy. OldSchoolMovies2 at gmail.com. You can tweet us at OldMovies.net. That's OldMovies, D-O-T-net, hashtag O-S-A-T-M. Tommy Boy Retrospective. Let's get our participants this week back from his one-week gray status hiatus. Heavy set.
For a rescue mission. When the world is threatened, when the world needs help, it calls on America. So I know who's asked to kick.
I'm old. It's official. Oh. Today, right now, March 31st, I am 30.
Shut up!
Are you fucking serious?
Serious.
Well, welcome to the Dirty 30s, my friend. Yep. How are you going to celebrate? By doing a podcast?
Isn't that what I do every other day?
Yeah, well, yeah, pretty much. Are you going to go get shit-faced somewhere? Or,
probably.
Go put a little coat on? Or
I don't know exactly what I'm going to do.
You know what? Flip a coin and just see where life takes you, my friend. Also, this week we've got Phil.
Who told you can eat my cookies?
Hey, what's up?
What's up, man? Welcome to the Tommy Boy Retrospective, requested by Heavyset himself. Let's get straight into it. Tommy Boy.
What? And also the 21-year anniversary of when this got released. One of my favorite movies got released on my 9th birthday.
Here we go. Heavyset's pick, one of his favorite movies. 21st anniversary. Tommy Boy. I'm just stalling it so I can pull up the trailer here. Here we go.
Nikes.
Is that for me?
No, son, that's for me.
Yeah! You know, a lot of people go to college for 7 years.
I know. They're called doctors.
This always has been, always will be, a family firm.
Oh, son of a...
Someday my son will run it.
Luke. Luke, I am your father, lad.
Aw, I've interrupted happy time.
That's my name!
Yeah, that's your new office now.
Whoa!
Do we really want to put the future of the company in Tommy's hands?
Promise me you'll look after Tommy Boy here till he gets his feet wet.
Sure, and thanks for choosing me. Hey, Tommy, this is not a vacation for me. I'm out here against my will, so the least you can do is pretend to work. Ugh, I can actually hear you getting fatter. All right, it's sale time, so remember, we don't take...
No for an answer.
No.
Okie dokie.
I'm gonna pass.
Gotcha, thanks.
Oh, son of a...
That's gonna leave a mark.
Okay, let's check you out. All right.
That's a clip, Bob.
Are you sure? He's a big dumb animal, isn't he, folks?
No, son of a...
What'd you do?
I'm a maniac, on the floor.
Did you eat a lot of paint chips when you were a kid?
Why?
Tommy Boy, 1995 American road comedy film directed by Peter Siegel, written by Bonnie and Terry Turner, produced by Lorne Michaels and from Saturday Night Live, and starring former Saturday Night Live castmates and close friends Chris Farley and David Spade. The working title for the film was originally Rocky Road. The film tells the story of socially and emotionally immature man, Farley, who learns lessons about friendship and self-worth following the sudden death of his industrial father. The film did well commercially but received mixed reviews from critics. The film was shot primarily in Toronto and Los Angeles. Undisclosed budget, I'm guessing probably around 10 to 12 million. Box office of 32.7 million. I believe this is his highest grossing box office movie that he soloed, Wayne's World. He just did a couple of cameos. So before we actually don't, let's go straight into it. Heavy set, the opening scene, young Tommy is going to school, running late for school, various physical activity situations. He's dropping his lunch to the dog. He's running through fucking fences. And then that kind of transitions into his older self in college doing the same thing. I actually thought the little kid who got cast was perfect.
Well, he was absolutely perfect. And I mean, there's much more I can say about that, like, because you only see him for a small amount of time. And now come to think about it, I want to know, like, the other stuff that he did. Did he, is he a guy that, or a kid that didn't really do much more, or did he continue on acting? There's not many times where people get it, like, absolutely right. And that's definitely one of them. And they only needed him for just a handful of scenes.
Yeah. Okay. We go to.
And also, there's a cutscene from that whole montage of when he's in college where there's like a parking lot and he's just rolling over hoods of cars. Fun fact.
Oh, geez. I don't remember that. I just watched the movie.
Deleted scene.
So deleted scene. Okay. Makes sense.
So here's a question. If he ran to school every single day, shouldn't he be super fit by then?
You would think. Maybe just the caloric intake versus the whatever a couple mile run to school was still of an obscene amount that even that couldn't assist him in.
Because his house is pretty far from the bus stop, which is pretty far from whatever school he's going to.
And he seems to be running pretty well.
I know.
And he seems to be running pretty well for his weight. So
Yeah,
Farley as a whole, which I figure they'd build that in kind of the character, was a very athletic dude. I know he played like football and rugby.
He's on the rugby team.
Well, I know he's in rugby in the movie, but technically they. Since he's in the movie, that's the only like little bit that they played with. Like, yeah, he's played rugby.
Yeah.
And so he then, you see, like, does a class doing it, like, filling in whatever answers in a test. Then he looks at the results. He's like, oh, D+. And he's, like, doing his usual Chris Farley shtick of fucking doing cartwheels and, like, fucking freaking out. Then he grabs some Asian kid and he's, like, happy. And he's like, this would probably be a little less awkward if I actually knew who the fuck you were. So I thought that scene was just, you know, typical A. Farley from SNL, but it regardless of what it is, and we're going to see this throughout the movie, any situation you put Farley in, he'll make it funny. Even if he's like just, you know, walking down a corridor, he can do something that will just make you laugh out loud. So that's, you start to see that in the beginning here. Then he graduates, so he goes to meet his dad. And you can see, like, you know, they're trying to portray him as like a bit of a delinquent, lazy, like, apparently the dad was supposed to pick him up. He was late. He was on the wrong flight. So that's when they introduce David Spade, which is actually the father's assistant. And so he's kind of just a straight man, kind of the accounting guy who crunches the numbers and gives all the intel to Tommy's dad who does the sales. But you right away, you see like the back and forth with Chris Farley and Spade, and it's really good. Anything you guys want to chime in there?
It's kind of where they show later on in the movie of how that it's the dad that Richard always wanted with Big Tom. And when you look at it in so many words, they were kind of like, they act like brothers, but they don't really ever acknowledge it in the movie. Yeah. I kind of wish we would have known a little bit more about what their childhood was like, because you actually see the character Richard in that early scene when he's a kid. And I think because he's riding his bike, late again, Tommy, you're pathetic. Shut up, Richard. And like, you don't know how close these two were. Were these guys great friends, or were they kind of like, you're the fat kid, ha 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 ha. That's something I question, but I think the undertone is that they were really close friends, like brothers.
To me, it actually came off like they went to school together but weren't close at all. That's maybe why it wasn't, they didn't really key to it when he was younger. Maybe they just both went to that school and they didn't kind of really hang out together.
What if, I wonder if there was a drifting away, especially going to college for 7 years.
We might be overthinking this a little bit.
Yeah, we could be.
A Chris Farley movie, we most definitely are overthinking that. Brian Dennehy as the father, I thought was cast really well.
Oh, he just, amazing. I always look at him as Big Tom.
Yeah, but you could totally see him being the dad. Like, not even just because they're both big guys, but just the character and the back and forth between the two. They had good chemistry together, too. I thought he was cast really well.
Yep, totally agree.
Okay, so then it moves to he gets his son his office, and then they do a tour of the plant. And, you know, Chris Farley's doing his regular shtick, fucking running in the walls and getting his head knocked, you know, knocking his head. And I don't think it was the hook thing. The hook scene was near the end. But I know he definitely knocked his head and then ran into a wall and whatever the fuck he did.
Yeah, he had his head on a, like, I want to say it was a low bar or something, like a pallet, something. And they even said, like, look alive, low bridge, and he's putting on his hard hat.
Yeah.
And then, like, as he's put, like, which the irony of it, like, oh, I'm going to put on a hard hat, and then he hits his head.
Yeah.
And also in this scene, it shows you how friendly Tommy Callahan was to people. Like, he knew so many people that worked there at the plant, and like, whether he grew up with them or have the age difference, like, they've worked at that plant for such a long time, and he still like managed to like be able to speak with them. So that showed you his, how friendly the character could be, which kind of leads to later on in the movie.
And you see also the small town feel, like, you know, the
yes,
people working there for 20 years, they know the family. And he also mentioned while he was getting the loan, while he was trying to get the loan, that, you know, it's been the company's been the family for multiple generations, small town, kind of relying on the company for, you know, to stay alive kind of thing. So it very resonates with like very small town America, like Flint, Michigan, with their, you know, car manufacturing sector going down. You can see people might relate to it.
But the irony to that point is the real life city. Sandusky, Ohio is the home of Cedar Point, one of the biggest amusement parks and roller coaster capitals. And like, basically, which, I mean, that thing's been around for many, many years.
Yeah.
So definitely during the time of this movie. So we're living in a fictitious Sandusky, Ohio, where that roller coaster, big moneymaker for the town, does not live.
Yeah, because you probably didn't notice, but Phil, maybe you noticed, but throughout the movie, you see a lot of like local Canadian actors playing most of the roles, like the side roles.
Well, it was shot in Toronto, and I think even the shots at the school, at the college, they were probably shot at University of Toronto, because that campus looks familiar.
Yeah, like just the reporters, yeah, the most of the auto workers, people just walking around town, like the store people. I recognized a lot of them from Canadian TV, actually, so that was kind of interesting. Just going back to the plant quick.
Going back to the college real quick. They said it in the actual college that Chris Farley graduated from, Marquette. There's very brief references to it, like I think on jackets and whatnot, but it is Marquette.
So yeah, the plant. They kind of, well, you know, it's a comedy, but Tommy sees a guy kind of buffering a car part, a brake or something. He's like, oh, can I try that? Sure. And in normal Chris Farley fashion, that thing then fucking starts knocking all over, the almost knocking people's heads off, and flies out a window. Like, he almost killed three people, and they just kind of like, oh, good shot, Tommy. You know, like, you almost died and you're fine with it. You have no issue with it. Like, not even the slight bit, even annoyed that you could have been dead, like right there. And imagine if the movie went that way. Imagine if the movie went that way and the car part knocked the guy and fucking killed him. And then the next 5 minutes of them are just like sitting there like all serious, like, how could you have done that and whatever. And then the movie just goes in a completely different turn. Maybe I might be taking this a little too seriously, but I'm not a huge fan of safety at that plant. That's all I'm saying, Heavy.
Well, we would have had a funeral earlier in the movie then.
Yeah. Yeah. And they probably would have just no-sold it, and Tommy would have started doing fucking cartwheels in the coffin or whatever, because that's what he does.
Well, I guess the whole point of the first half of the movie is him not dealing with any consequences with his actions.
Yeah.
Because he's still being treated as the boss's son. And, like, I guess everyone sees him as a little kid that runs around the plant and it's all cool. Even though he's technically what? He should be in his 30s now or something.
He clearly looks 30.
Yeah.
So, he looked out of his age in the college scene, but I guess you got to kind of.
Yeah, but people still, like, the people that know him since he was a kid still see him as the kid. So,
right.
It's all good.
Then you see how David Spade kind of gets stuck babysitting him or showing him the ropes, I guess, for the first couple of weeks. This is before, spoiler there. This is before we know that dad's gonna die like tomorrow. So he was kind of there to just, you know, chaperone him, show him the rope, show him around. Okay.
I think the next big scene is about Derek scene.
Yeah. So Paul, his name's Paul, right? No.
No.
Oh, yeah. No, okay, yeah. First we get the Bo Derek scene in the swimming pool. And how old was she at the time?
39.
Bo Derek was 39 at the time?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You remember her turning 40 not too long after this.
Yeah. Because 10 came out in 79, which is the joke, like, oh, she's a 10. Well, 10 came out in 79, and this is what, 16 years later?
I mean, for 39, she looked fucking good.
Yeah.
She looked 80s hot, but like she looked like she was in the 80s. Just the look and maybe the hairstyle or whatever. But I mean, she had a good body. Like, so she looked good. So you know, Farley's like, is that for me? And then he's like, no, son. I've been working hard. That's for me. So then you know, he gets to meet his quote-unquote stepmom. And then he finds out that he has a brother as well. And this is where Paul gets introduced. And Paul is like the biggest dick ever. And they clearly show it, like, when he starts. Who is it? Because Paul looked really familiar.
It's Rob Lowe.
That's why.
Uncredited, okay. Rob Lowe.
Oh, that's why. I didn't see him here.
Oh, he's not uncredited? He's uncredited in the movie? That's crazy.
Yeah, he's uncredited because of some deal he had with, because he was shooting The Stand, so he could not be in two movies or something.
So he's not even in the
movie. Yeah, exactly.
He's uncredited.
Exactly.
That's kind of like Farley. I know he's uncredited in, I want to say, Billy Madison and Dirty Work.
I don't remember him having a major role in that, though. This was a major role. He was in like six different scenes.
He's the, you would consider one half of the main antagonist.
Exactly.
Yeah. And they introduce him like he walks off a bus and takes a milk carton and throws it in a baby's carriage. Like, what the fuck? Biggest dick ever. But like, so they introduce him within 3 seconds. First he knocks a window, fucking scaring a kid. And then he takes an empty milk carton and throws it in a baby's carriage. So I'm like, okay, you're clearly defying this guy's being the antagonist. I'm short of like fucking literally lining up and booting the baby carriage. You know, like this guy's a massive dick. And then I got a note here. Farley acting like a kid everywhere. I think it's just in general, he comes off as like he's like a 6-year-old in a 30-year-old's body. Every scene he does in primarily in the movie, except for a couple of small scenes where you see him like act serious, and like every SNL skit. But regardless, he does that shtick extremely well, and he's extremely entertaining. You know, I'm sure his humor's not for everybody. Not everybody likes physical comedy, Jim Carrey kind of stuff. But if you do, this guy's a master at it. I know he did Second City and SNL stuff. So, like, he was definitely a veteran of kind of, like, the physical. We even saw, like, one of the opening scenes where he fell through a table again. Like, you see the table, you're like, yeah, he's falling through it right away, you know? You look for some objects for him to interact with or dive through or fucking, you know, like, I don't know. Go ahead.
Well, I would say it's like early on, it's him not having a lot of responsibility. It's like what we said, you know, he was the boss's son, and then that kind of small town. So like he kind of got to, in so many words, he was kind of like Billy Madison. Like, and now come to think about it, this is almost like a different version of Billy Madison. You're taking part of it and putting it into a different scenario, and then you're obviously adding different stuff. But it's that backbone of like a father makes a lot of money, and the son kind of like coasts through life, and then it's that turnaround where he actually starts to get responsibility. The only thing with Billy Madison is the old man didn't die.
Right. I'm sure there's other movies with this format of like delinquent fucking whatever, heir of some money, blah, blah, blah. You know, like I'm sure this is not the first time, will not be the last time this format is done. It works for some, you know, I guess it depends on who's casted. But the next scene is Farley getting introduced to Rob Lowe, finding out it's his brother. And Rob Lowe, not impressed at all with this guy. He's like, this guy's a fucking douche. So they're going around town, and then they land up trying to cow tip. Of course, in Farley fashion, he slips and falls through the cow, like underneath the cow, between her legs, and starts a stampede, also assisted by the farmer firing shotguns into the air, which I'm sure was a great idea. They get covered in cow shit and dirt or whatever, and then he's rinsing them off. And then in great Farley fashion, again, getting sprayed in the face with a hose, starts doing his rendition of Maniac from Flashdance. So there you go. And I'm curious if that was ad-libbed or if that was planned.
I'm willing to bet there's a good chunk of this movie that was ad-lib.
Because you were mentioning also, like, half of the back and forth between Spade and Farley were just the writers were listening in on them talking just casually and added most of that into the script, apparently.
Yeah. The big scene that I know is the Fat Guy Little Coat one, but I know they said there's other ones that they added into because they would constantly have like a back and forth like on set. And a lot of the script was actually written like the time of. It was kind of like predating current Raw.
We then get introduced to the love interest in the movie, Michelle Brock, who is also extremely familiar. And I didn't see who, was it Julie Warner?
Yep.
Okay, and she's in a bunch of movies too, right?
She's been in, let's see, Flatliners, Doc Hollywood, Puppet Masters. Let's see her TV stuff, if anything jumps out. 21 Jump Street. Well, she's been in a bunch of stuff. Nothing.
She looked, like, when I was looking at her, I'm like, fuck, I know her from
something. Because she looks like another actress, and I'm trying to...
I thought it was a good casting.
Yeah.
For the love interest. Not too attractive. You know, attractive enough that...
Yeah, small town attractive.
Maybe Farley. Yeah, maybe Farley.
Girl next door type of thing.
Yeah, yeah. She played that perfect. What I really liked, actually, but there was a serious kind of... There were a few serious moments in the movie. But the father-son talk heavy. Where Farley kind of... He was doing like... It's a very rare, authentic scene that you see like he's just kind of being himself and talking with his dad, and there's no like stupidness mask, you know, he's not trying to act goofy in that, he's trying to be real. And I thought it was a powerful scene because then, you know, he's losing the shtick, he's actually acting.
Yeah, I think that it's also part of the final scene to the movie. And whenever you see Farley in that boat period, like there's a different side of him, of that character, that's not the big clown. He's kind of more like the serious Tony. And yeah, he does do a lot more acting. Those are some of the greatest scenes of that movie. There's that one coming up is one of my favorites, is one that there's no dialogue at all.
Which one was that?
That would be the bagpipe scene.
Oh, right, right. Okay. Well, we're jumping the gun there. Because then they get married, of course. Of course. Chris Farley and his dad get married now. It's Brian Dennehy and Bo Derek, whatever characters their name is. Big Tommy or Old Tommy and Love Interest get married. And I didn't know, Farley sounded like he could sing pretty well, too. Like, maybe he got a bit of vocal enhancement to the vocal track, but he was actually on key and stuff. He was singing pretty good with his dad.
I'm not sure, but I think he might have had some musical background, but not like hardcore into it.
But yeah, no, he was on key. He was singing pretty. I mean, the dad sucked, but he was actually pretty good. And then during the song, he fucking croaks. Dad dies, and then yeah, then you see it transitions from like they're kind of standing over the collapsed body at the wedding to it goes straight to the funeral. Like it transitions into a funeral scene. So that was in a quick way, I guess, of like, okay, this character's done. But yeah, like you said, it was just kind of him sitting over the body there. But you could see too, because the guy really can show his emotions. It's more ridiculous emotions. But when he's being serious too, like you can see him really getting, you know, into it.
Well, it was that. And then like is after this point is when they start playing Amazing Grace on the bagpipes.
Yeah.
And like there's a couple scenes of him like just like walking, like one I know he's walking around the plant, just kind of like sitting there, like taking it in that, you know, his father who built this is gone and all that. And that's, I think that's another great acting moment.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Then it transitions to Farley's with Michelle Brock on the boat. And you see it's kind of dipped more into the side where Farley's sitting, kind of anchored into the water there. And they have, again, the kids. I recognize one of the fucking kids from, like, you can't do that on television or whatever the fuck it was. They're kind of doing, like, back and forth insults between the kids making fun of Farley and Farley kind of trash talking them. And then you hear a little bit of Matt Foley there from Farley when he's talking to the kids, if you noticed. That kind of came out. The same hand gestures and everything.
A little bit.
Then Michelle Brock scares the kids off. Tells she's gonna kill them in their sleep and all that, and then Farley's all impressed that she scared the kids away.
I think that's a great scene too. It's not exactly your effect. You start off with kind of him being sentimental and, you know, kind of like talking. That's where the boat gets introduced and how him and his father used to come out, and he's getting interrupted. So obviously, you know, he starts off like he doesn't want him act crazy in front of Michelle. So he pops back a little bit. Then these kids, at doing what they do, can yell stuff back. And right. even at his hardest, he can't seem to scare them away. And then she's the one that scares them away.
Yeah, which is good. It's cool. That transitions into the board meeting post-death, Tommy's dad. And you can see like they're SNL writers because throughout the meeting, this old woman keeps talking about like how whores are going to take over the town. And
So I'll say it's like one thing that's never really talked about again in the movie. And that just might be another ad lib. I swear there's no.
Yeah.
There's nothing connects it. It's just that whole joke.
And it's so random. Like, it's just this old lady on the board saying, oh, they're all going to come in at $20 and buy whores and fuck whores. Well, she doesn't say fuck. But it's essentially putting her husband under the bus because he had one affair like 80 years ago. And now she's convinced that the entire town's going to be hookers and they're going to blow people and stuff. So, I mean, apart from that part of the scene, that was kind of like random, but it was funny. Tommy decides like to take over the sales part of the business, and he puts his stock up as collateral for the bank, like his house and his stock, and says, hey, you know, let me try to do this, and you know, this will be the collateral for the loan for the new brakes division.
Yeah, because that's the big key, that they're going to introduce the new brake pad division, and that's a big thing. Even at the wedding, Big Tom was making a sale. So it shows like how this guy was as a businessman. A, he could, as it said later on in the movie, he could sell ketchup popsicles to women and white gloves.
Yeah.
And it's just like he was dedicated to it. And that's kind of what you were going to have to see from Tommy, to do the same thing. And now he had to do that impossible task to go around and sell these brake pads. And one of the things that they do say is how there's not a guarantee on the box. And he was going to have to be the salesman to pitch why they don't need that, or just be able to sell these. And it seemed like an impossible task.
Right. And at that point, he's like, you know, nobody has faith in him. And they're like, you can't do this. You're not your father. And he says, yeah, but you know, David Spade's character, he's like, yeah, but he can help me out. He knows the business. He can teach me the ropes, and then I'll help sell. So then, I guess against his better wishings, David Spade kind of reluctantly goes along on this journey with Tommy, this road trip to go and sell brake pads and save the company.
Which then the road trip begins. The road trip across the Midwest.
Or America.
In and around Toronto.
Yeah, exactly. All kinds of like Toronto suburbs, I'm sure. So, you know, his sales scene starts off a little rocky, because I think in the first five or six dealers like, no. And he's like, okay, bye. And he just kind of leaves. First he says, I will not take no for an answer. And you hear that in the trailer.
Yeah.
Like, okay, no. Okay, bye. And he leaves.
Mm-hmm.
And then
they get a maybe.
Then they get a maybe and he's happy and they're like, ooh. And was that the scene where they're crashing his toy cars and send him on fire and shit?
That was...
I think it was the maybe.
I think that's part of the montage. I think that ends that part.
I'm guessing the first round of sales, yeah.
Where no, he gets the maybe is where he just... I think that's where he just goes crazy. And he said, that's it, and I quit.
Oh, yeah. It's jumping ahead, but yeah.
There's
the I quit scene where he ends up like ripping his hair off.
Yeah.
And then there's the... You know what?
The maybe's first. Yeah, he takes the toy...
You're right.
Stop interrupting me. The toy cars are like fucking smashing. He sets it on fire and the guy goes, you're psycho, get out of here. And then I think the next day it was, okay, this is going to be an easy sale. He buys from us all the time. And he's like, well, you fucking sell it. And the guy's like, no, yeah. David Spade, you're a dick.
I never liked you.
Yeah.
I'll never like you. I will never like you.
Nobody ever likes you. You should be fired from SNL.
There's a deer rotting. There's a deer carcass rotting in the back of our seat.
Rotting in the back of your car, yeah. And well, actually, no. We might be jumping the gun because I believe after the scene where he sets the toy car on fire, we then see the quote unquote son from the uncredited role goes to make out with his quote unquote mother, and that gets introduced, and you're like, okay, I see what's happening now for the scam. So at this point, they. Having a lot of trouble there doing sales, and unfortunately come across a deer and fucking at the time they think they kill it. So of course David Spade does the right thing, and well, in his mind, with me, if you hit a deer, you put it on the side of the road so it doesn't, you know, get in the way of traffic, but you don't put it in your car. And like, just I guess he had the idea of that, okay, I'm gonna bring it to the vet or have the carcass destroyed, or I don't know. So then they decide to take a dead deer and just throw it in the back of their truck or car. Actually, it's like a convertible. So I don't know how the fuck they stuffed the deer in there, but they got it in. And then I think that's when they do the crazy sale, or that's when Farley goes fucking nuts on the guy. And starts like pulling his hair out and fucking, yeah. He's like, I'm a fucking loser. I quit. Ah, you know,
yeah, cause the whole thing was going in that one. Like we were saying before is how he's kind of like, you know, this is one of our old customers. So we should be in and out. And that's when Tommy's like, you know, Hey, you know, this sale thing isn't so good, you know, blah, blah, blah. He's like, all right, you know, why don't I try? Like Richard is the one that's supposed to sell it. And Tommy's supposed to stay quiet. So the whole time, like while he's trying to sell it, or they're there towards the end, like you see like just Tommy just fucking like giggling because seeing like how, oh, like, oh, I can make a sale, I can do this, I can do that, and he bombs. And then he just goes crazy afterwards.
Yeah, he loses his shit, and then the guy's like, okay, you're a psycho, get the fuck out of here. And that's when, you know, you figure, okay, things can't get any worse. But then the deer fucking just no sells getting hit by a car wakes up and starts trashing his shit out of David Spade's car. He's like, fuck this. I'm getting the fuck out. Rips the roof, the side, the mirrors, everything. Fucking just like takes a giant fucking like fuck you dump to the car. Trashes it. Looks at him like fuck you and leaves. And then Spade's like, my car. And Chris Farley, of course, in his 6-year-old fashion, he's like, that's awesome. Your car got trashed. He's like, sorry, your car got trashed. I thought it was just a typical, like, great back and forth scene between those two, kind of like the serious David Spade and the 6-year-old Chris Farley.
I think it's another story that gets told throughout the movie is how as soon as the car gets shown in the movie, you know, Eminem's rolling inside the dash, and you know David Spade kind of like says like, oh, you know, the melted chocolate inside the dash, that really ups the resale because it's like how much he loves his car. And then by the end of the movie, it's just obliterated,
completely fucking trashed.
I mean, we got this scene. I think we missed the very brief scene where the door comes off.
Yeah, at the gas station. Yeah,
he's backing up.
They're all out. They only have diesel. Better go to the next station.
And then he opens the door and it falls off. And Farley's like, what did you do?
One of the things that I actually point out that's like wrong with that scene is you can actually see that there's a dent on the door beforehand. It's pretty big. And then whenever he goes to pull the door off, it's like perfect.
So yeah, you somehow like buffed out the dent during the 2 minutes he was asking for directions.
Mm-hmm.
Then we get introduced to Dan Aykroyd's character, Zelinsky, who is the company that actually wants to buy the Callahan parts to put under kind of their wing. And I find Aykroyd is kind of perfect for, he's doing like the Bears kind of accent, but.
Well, it's from Chicago.
I find it's perfect for that. Like he is the absolutely perfect cast for that kind of, salesman, tycoon kind of car parts dude. After that, they're in the hotel, and that's when you have the fat guy in the little coat scene.
Speaking of Aykroyd, there's actually a reference to Tommy Boy and 51st State by Aykroyd.
Really?
Because he talks about how, because I've seen the movie a handful of times, but you know, where his character gets introduced in 51st States, he talks about like the certain division of the hospital was donated by Callahan Auto Group from Sandusky, Ohio.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I didn't catch that.
Oh, yeah.
Is it under, I'm guessing the Sandler stuff is under the same wing, the same distribution, probably Paramount?
Oh, yeah, this was through Paramount because Chris Farley and David Spade had a 2-movie deal with them at the same time. I think a lot of the SNL movies were coming out via Paramount at the time. And I think if I'm correct with this movie, they wanted to have a movie starring Spade and Farley, but they didn't have a character, like an SNL character, prepared for both of them to go into. And there was a couple hit and misses with SNL movies at the time. I think they were more going off a lot of misses because I know they had they had
Wayne's World, which did extremely well.
Well, that was on the other end of it. You had like Coneheads and Wayne's World do extremely well, but you had that Stuart Smiley movie. I think that bombed. And I want to say It's Pat. That's another SNL character. That movie kind of bombed too. So they were
okay. Let's look at the timeline here. Wayne's World was 92. Coneheads was 93.
Mm-hmm.
So that's pretty close to that 95. I'm trying to see which didn't do well between that.
What about, it's like Stuart something saves the world or something.
Stuart Saves His Family? That was 95.
It was afterwards.
Oh, that was after. Okay.
Yeah.
What about It's Pat?
It's Pat was 95 too.
Fuck. I doubt those came out right beforehand too, like January, February.
And like It's Pat, they're not going to be, I'm sure It's Pat didn't get a huge budget too, you know? So It's Pat's not getting a $100 million budget. So even if it makes nothing, they don't care. And you see like, you know, what I guess would be considered a flop, like Ladies Man and Superstar, Night at the Roxbury, I think did pretty good. But they were all like 98, 2000.
a lot of those ones are actually, I think those are cult classics. Like, there's a lot of people that like some of those movies, but like more than you would think. Ladies Man might be on the lower end of that, but the Superstar and especially Night at the Roxbury.
Okay, yeah, It's Pat made 60,000 at the box office. Stuart Smalley, 912,000. Estimated budget, 15 million. Jesus. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, those two bombed.
Jesus. Yeah, that's horrible.
Then I think it had to do with that they didn't have a character ready for them, but they really want to put them in a movie. So this is like, this is an SNL movie, but it's actually not. Like, Lorne Michaels was a part of it, but they don't have the SNL, like, banner on there.
Right. Yeah, you know, 32 million is pretty good. I can't imagine this was more than 10 for the budget, so I don't think it lost money. I don't think it made a ton of money, but
I think this is one of those movies that made more money in the home market because that's when it really blew up. It was one of those things, the story a lot of back then. It would, you know, it would do okay in the movie theaters, and then it would come back out on VHS at the time and then just explode because it was starting to catch on, like, oh, you got to watch this. Oh, you got to watch this. I mean, I didn't watch it until it was on, at the time, pay-per-view, which same thing as the home market, but then I end up getting a VHS later on.
Right. Okay, so then we start seeing like more scenes with just Spade and Farley, kind of like you see the bonding happen with the radio karaoke. And I'm calling this right now, actually.
Wait, did we skip the hotel scene with the girl jumping into the pool?
No, it's later.
That was Fat Guy in the Little Coat.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're on Fat Guy Little Coat. That's okay. A different hotel scene.
Okay, it's true.
At that time, they've already made a sale. They haven't made a sale yet.
Right, right.
Yeah, so on the radio, they start playing music, and then they go down to... I don't recognize any of these tunes, so it's probably just, like, generic music that they bought for the movie they couldn't afford. Like, well, actually, no, they had some real songs on there.
Yeah.
But this one was, like, the one they got, like, emotionally... They started crying to was, like, Baby Baby, so I don't know what the fuck it was. I didn't recognize the song. I don't think it's a real song, but... No,
it's a real song. I forget who it is. I'm not really great on that time frame of music. There's people who are listening who are probably going to tweet us. Hashtag OSATM.
Yeah, so whatever the fuck that song was, then they start like... he's like, oh, I'm not going to play that. Well, you turn it off if you want. No, I'll keep it on. And of course, it goes into the... They start singing and getting like emotionally fucking involved in the song and stuff. And then I think that's when the fight happens, right? Like he smashes the car or something. Oh, no, they went to a gas station. He left the oil can in the dash, and then which led the dash to not close properly, and then they had that thing where the dash flipped up and he couldn't see anything, and of course Farley's like, yeah, you're an idiot, whatever, but he pointed out that Farley left the can in the fucking thing. They have this massive fight, and Spade actually, it's more just Spade fucking punching him in the face, which is kind of, I guess, Tommy Boy like, oh, you can't you're a pussy, you can't beat me up.
So they got Captain Limpress, but want a kiss, I call you mother.
Yeah And so Spade finally takes him out with a 2x4. He somehow gets a block of wood from somewhere and like drops him with it. Then Farley's like, oh, my face kind of hurts. Like, do I have anything? He's like, no.
I hit your shoulder, man.
Yeah, I think I hit your shoulder. And then 2 seconds later, the waitress is like, yo, what the fuck happened to your face? But then that's where you see Tommy starts to get the confidence because he sells. They're like, nah, the kitchen's closed. You can't have the wings. And Tommy's like, again, only Chris Farley can have a scene where he has a bread roll and he makes like a super crazy fucking comedic scene with like just him in a bread roll. But then it convinces the waitress to turn the fryer back on and put the wings in. And he's like, oh, why don't you just sell like that? And he's like, yeah, I'll do that.
That's one way to put it.
Well, how would you put it?
I can quote most of this scene.
Go.
Okay. Hold on. I need 1 second.
Get into character.
He's going to get prepared. He's a method actor. Ladies and gentlemen, this is scene one, take one. Heavy set as Chris Farley and Tommy Boy. Restaurant scene with waitress, take one. Scene one, go.
I know it's not perfect, but this is 99% good. Helen, you look like a Helen. Let me tell you why I suck as a salesman. See, I go in this guy's office, he's even remotely interested in buying what I got to sell. Well, then I get all excited. I'm like, JoJo, the idiot circus boy with a pretty new pet. The pet is my possible sale. Oh, I love my pet. So I stroke it and pet it and massage it. I love my little naughty pet. You're naughty. And then I take my naughty pet and I go... Oh, I killed it! I killed my sale! That's when I blow it. So people like me and you gotta forge ahead. Am I right? God, you're sick.
Bravo. Bravo.
That was actually pretty good. Especially like the shaking thing. You got that down, man.
Well, that and I'm wearing a headset, so that made it even harder.
That is hilarious.
So okay. How many times have you seen this scene?
About 800 times, probably.
I've lost count. Because what we were saying before we started recording, I spent a summer, and when I was roughly middle school, I want to say it was between either 5th and 6th or 6th and 7th, where Tommy Boy just lived in my VCR. Actually, mine between 7th and 8th, but it's beyond the point. I'd watch it every day, or maybe I'd watch like half of it, then the rest of it the next night. No, that's the only thing I ever really watched, and I'd watch it with closed captions on.
Was that the only VHS tape like in your library? Or?
No, I had many others, but I love that movie, and I wanted to learn the lines. I love Chris Farley.
And the machine never ate the tape?
Never ate the tape, and also the tape came on with there was no previews on the VHS, but there was like this video montage trying to sell a bunch of other movies. Like, and they all played the same song, but they all had like little clips of all these movies. The song was Footloose. So every time I hear Footloose, I think of Tommy Boy and that pre-roll that played.
Gonna have a montage. So the bedroom scene between the 80s stepmom and whatever, Paul. So you figure out, okay, they're like, they have to try to sabotage the company so that they can't get the sales out. So his first line of trying to sabotage is like, I'm going to take the trucks out. And for whatever reason, he's like 10 feet away from the truck, but he uses a sniper rifle. Like, you can just use anything. You can just punch the tires with a knife. You're right there. But he has to have a sniper rifle for some reason to shoot from 10 feet. But the company was smart. They had a Rottweiler, and then the Rottweiler, he was like a foot away from him. He's like, okay, Paul's like, Rottweiler's not going to stop me. And then, I don't know, he was having problems with the visor or the window or something, and that fucks up his gun. He shoots the sign. The sign falls down to the chain, and then Rottweiler gets loose. And, of course, insanity happens where the fucking Rottweiler bites the shit out of him.
Can we just talk about this is one of those aspects that this wouldn't work today because there's probably no company out there, especially like that has nobody on the premises that night, does not have video surveillance.
No cameras and just like a random Rottweiler just roaming around the grounds. And he's just walking around with a sniper rifle. This is the housekeeping. I thought it was a stupid little scene with like David Spade's outside Chris Farley's hotel room.
I think you just skipped a lot.
Okay, what'd I skip?
Because that's the hotel, the housekeeping scene is the end of all them making all the sales they needed to make. And that, right. like he had just called the last people up ahead of time, or he called somebody that they already talked to, or that maybe gave him a no. I couldn't exactly figure out which one. And they gave him a yes. So that put him over the mark, so they were good. You still miss his first sale, and you also miss the other hotel scene. The first sale, which is
the chicken wing.
Well, no. It's a guy who, you know, his whole thing is, you know,
he wants the guarantee on the label.
Yeah, he wants the guarantee on the box because you know it makes you feel all better.
But it guarantees that it's shit.
All they sold you was a guaranteed piece of shit. I mean,
I can take your shit in the box right now, put a guarantee on it.
And then like because he starts off with the whole thing of I'm trying to figure out exactly how he gets into it, but like
he's trying to do that same. The same metaphor, like the whole movie and fucks it up until the end.
Yeah.
Where if I, you know, but the steak.
The T-bone. The T-bone by getting to the cow's ass or something.
The real one is, I know this one so well.
Well, apparently not.
Fuck you, because we're recording. That's why.
Let's pull it up.
The scene is, you can take a good look at a T-bone by sticking your head up a bull's ass, but you wouldn't you rather take the butcher's word for it?
Yeah, that's what it is.
There we go.
And then
he continuously fucks it up.
You can take a good look of a T-bone steak by sticking your head up a butcher's ass. No, wait, it's got to be your...
And the guy's like, what? But they're all like, what the fuck are you saying? But it was various variations of like looking up the butcher's ass or sticking the T-bone up the butcher's ass or whatever. But you can never kind of figure it out. And yeah, he was trying to sell because there's no warranty on the box. He's like, well, only people who put warranties are pieces, you know, car parts are pieces of shit. We don't need to because our name kind of sells itself.
And then I remember what it was, is he's like, you know, why would they put a guarantee on a box? I mean, it makes you feel all warm and toasty inside. Now, why shouldn't you? Figure you put it underneath your pillow at night and the guarantee fairy will come by and leave you a quarter. Build a little model airplane, says the fairy, but we're not buying it. Next thing you know, your daughter's knocked up and there's money missing off the dresser. I've seen it 100 times. So why would they put a guarantee on a box? Well, all I know they sold you was a guaranteed piece of shit. I mean, that's all it is, isn't it? I mean, if you want me to take a dump in a box and mock a guarantee, I will. I got spare time. But for your sake, your customer's sake, and your daughter's sake, you might might want to consider buying a quality product from us. Okay, I'll buy.
There you go. And that guy, also a Canadian actor.
I always remember him from the end when that whole thing where they bring back all the like people from out the movie and they're watching that scene play on the TV. And he's like, I bought car parts for him. I thought we were watching cartoons.
Yeah. Yeah, that was... It's just so weird to see all these fucking Canadian actors on it.
Like TV actors that show up in a random movie.
Yeah. I'm like, I know this guy. And then can we get to the housekeeping scene now? We're all caught up?
Am I missing
anything else?
You're missing the pool scene.
Oh, the pool scene, right. Okay. So Farley goes out looking for food or something. And then Spade's like, oh, don't pull the weight room gimmick on it again. He's like, because this is hot chick in a bikini in the pool. He's like, he's going to pull the weight room scene or whatever, gimmick. And he's like, oh, you know where the weight room is? And then, like, right away, you know?
Fun fact, that woman, ex-girlfriend of Chris Farley.
Fuck off.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yep.
He tapped out.
That's crazy. Okay. So, yeah. Keep that in your heads, buddy. So then he goes looking for, I guess, quote unquote, the weight room. And then she gets starts getting undressed, and now she's looking around. She doesn't see anybody, and Spade's like, oh, fuck, I'm going to fucking rub one out here to this girl in the pool. And then Farley comes back a little early, and fucking Spade's like, you know, covering himself up in the bed, and then Farley's making all these masturbatory references, I guess. Heavy set, because you've seen this movie 1,000 times, can you recite any from memory?
My favorite is the very last one where they're laying in bed and I think they're talking about like something about the next day. And then he goes, Richard, who's your favorite little rascal? Is it Alfalfa or is it Spanky? And then he very faintly says, Sinner.
Yeah, the Sinner was good. The Sinner scene was good.
And then like, oh, it's a pretty girl down there. What if she goes out with one of the Yankees?
Okay, can I do the housekeeping scene now?
You really want to do the housekeeping scene? Which in between here, there's, I think, a montage of them selling a lot. Pick up a hitchhiker and all that kind of stuff. But
yeah, Spade seems to be cruising her. So then he knocks on the door, housekeeping. And it's all this various thing. I'll give you a towel and everything. Housekeeping, I jerk you off. And he's like, what the fuck kind of hotel is this? And then he opens it up and it's David Spade. So that was, you can see that was probably ad-libbed.
Yeah, for sure.
It came off as ad-libbed. Heavy, do you know?
I don't know for sure. There's probably part of it that was scripted, but maybe him coming to the door in his underwear probably wasn't.
Yeah, that was, I could have done without that. Then they go into the carpool karaoke thing, which I thought was you could see them kind of, the two characters bonding and stuff. And to me, this almost seems like a precursor, because I know the new late night host on CBS does this. And I've got a feeling that he kind of ripped this off from this movie, because they did... kind of a carpool karaoke. Then they have this is a stupid scene. I don't get this. Spades has an open canister of alcohol in the car, and Farley's driving like a fucking retard.
You missed the whole part of, because Richard keeps trying to, not Richard, his brother, Tommy's quote brother,
right,
Paul,
yeah, he keeps trying to sabotage, and he finally gets one by going into the computer system, because Michelle Brock doesn't have a file cabinet to keep all the files, so he was able to go in and, like, mess up orders to get people to cancel, so all those sales were in vain, and they go back. By the time it takes them to get back to the plant, all this is set in, people have canceled, and, you know, they're going to have to, you know, sell the business, and it's them just going, like, kind of like fuck life type thing. Richard's drinking a lot, Tommy's being actually, kind of another one that shows you now he's being responsible and driving but not drinking
too. Yeah.
And then the cops come up on him, and he, instead of freaking out because they're not going to believe that he wasn't drinking at all, so he does a little trick that his dad taught him, starts driving around like crazy, pulls into a field, and then him and Richard act like they're getting attacked by bees. And ironically enough, both cops are allergic to bees. Yeah, I'm allergic to bees. Me too. I'm like, what are the odds?
Okay, here's the thing. It's at night.
That is true.
When do you see bees flying around at night?
They're not the smartest people. Those cops are not. Yeah. They don't look very smart.
Why didn't they just film that during the day? I don't get it.
Was he shouting? Chris Farley's like, firearms won't help in this situation or something?
Yeah, he's like, forget your firearms. They're useless against this. Yeah. It's fucking ridiculous. Oh, fucking classic Farley, I'm telling you. So then they're like, okay, all right, we got a last-ditch effort to save the company. We can go see Zelensky in Chicago and convince him to... not close the plant.
Because he seems like a nice guy.
Yeah, he seems like a, you know, naive Chris Farley's like, oh, this guy's a good guy. He won't close the plant if I convince him to. But they have to do it before a certain time because I think the other guys are going to sign over the company. So they have to find a flight to Chicago. Nothing is available, apparently. So
one of my favorite lines from that little bit. That I didn't get till I was older, a little bit older, but the whole fact of, like, you know, they're trying to book a flight, and then she's like, well, I can book you on a flight coming back from Chicago. Does that help?
I can book you on a direct flight back from Chicago.
And he just goes, hi, I'm Earth. Have we met?
No.
I don't think so. Awesome. Yeah, she did have a Canadian accent, come to think about it. I don't think so.
Told you, man. They're all Canadian. So they come up with a genius plan to, I think, bribe the flight attendants for their uniforms. And somehow Farley's fits. So he must have like a pretty heavy set chick or guy or whatever to fit in their fucking flight. My guess is they bribed them or they stole them or something. I don't know what they did. But he asked for money. So I think they bribed them. So then they're like, oh, we have extra staff on. I'm like, okay, that's good. And then, of course, you got like the combo of David Spade being an asshole on the... saying, like, you're all going to die and shit on the intercom, with Farley fucking pointing the nonsense and getting his getting choked by the fucking the flotation device in the airplane and stuff like that. So that was fun. And again, you get the Farley in the changing room. You know, like, do you see, for some reason, David Spade changes in like 8 seconds. And, like, you see Farley looking at him like, how the fuck did you do that? But they never bring it up, which I thought was funny.
Mm-hmm.
It's more just like he's, like, double-taking, like, but they never mention it.
Mm-hmm.
And then you see, okay, now Chris Farley's got to change. And, of course, in Farley fashion, turns changing a uniform or changing into a suit in a hotel bathroom into an absolute fucking catastrophe, where he's getting his tie choked in the fucking toilet and he's smashing his head on the changing table and he literally flies through the bathroom door. And it's Farley seems to me like the only guy that can, maybe apart from Jim Carrey, that could make changing in an airport bathroom that entertaining.
Agreed. And, like, all the stuff that he does, like, there's no reason for him. Like, if he's even changed that small of a space, it's him exaggerating to it. But that just makes even fun. And then when he, like, actually goes out the door, like, you see, like, a whole bunch of, like, toilet paper and everything just completely flying in the air and everything. Totally adds to the scene.
Then, so they make it to the big building that Zelensky, I guess, owns or works in. And I don't know if this has ever happened in real life. You would think it might have. But Farley's like, I forget. It's because, did he need to look for Zelensky? That, and they just wanted everybody's attention? Is that why he tried to get everybody's attention?
Yeah, they want to know if, because, like, he had just went in.
Okay, so he's like, can I have everybody's attention? And then fucking everybody figures, I don't know, bank robbery or something. They all hit the deck. The cops, like, pulling the worst cops in the building ever. They just say, they don't see any weapon or anything. They just hit the ground and launch their guns at him, which is awesome. And again, one of the cops is clearly a Canadian actor that was on TV, on CBC. So then he somehow manages to get, like, away from that, and he
just walks away.
Yeah, like, nobody's going to notice. He's like...
the only one that notices is the kid.
Yeah, the kid's like...
You're a fat guy to try to rob...
with a small head. Yeah. He's like, I'm a small head. And then they go in the elevator, and Zelensky happens to be in the elevator. He finally meets him. And you can see, like, Zelensky's... He's a bit of a dick, but he's, like, just a typical business guy. Like, he's like, listen, this is how it works. Like, you can't, you know... I might come off as a super nice guy on TV, but it's just about making money. But he doesn't come off as, like, such an evil guy. He's just like, that's how business works. So then... Then you see in the background the news, like, this, they're talking about the quote unquote bank robbery, and that, like, he's in the building, he's like right there, and they're talking about this bank robbery. And but I like the Callahan scene with Zelensky, because it kind of gives Zelensky a better depth, and you see Callahan, like, trying to save his town, save his company and stuff. So I thought that was it. Then he comes out with the ingenious idea of taking fireworks and strapping them to his chest.
Road flares.
And strapping them to his chest, which, like, in today's day and age, he would have been fucking shot in the head.
Oh, God, yes.
Yeah, he's been dead in 2 seconds. But instead, he convinces a news crew to go with him up to the office.
Yeah, because...
hold on. I'm skipping the marriage thing, right?
Well, you're skipping... It's more or less, you know, they're trying to try to save the company and everything. And that's when, in so many words, like you were kind of saying, of how Zelensky was kind of like, you know, that's just what I am on TV. I'm actually, you know, this businessman. So it's basically like Callahan, Tommy, is trying to be that salesman that he's been. But Zelensky is a higher level, like, salesman, because he's just kind of like, this isn't going to work on me. You know, and then they get to the actual boardroom where they're going to sign over the company, and he can't go in there because he's no longer an owner. So they,
right.
In so many words, they kick him out of the building. He has to go out. And Michelle Brock comes up with the whole thing of, actually, that's not, you know, his quote mom is, and or his brother isn't his real brother, and the marriage wasn't legal, so technically he still owns half the company. So he does the very smart thing of staging a terrorist attack, I mean heist. Right. And like he goes back to into the bank where they're still talking to the people about the rock quote robbery that happened. And of course, the cops are totally exaggerating every bit of it. So right. That was kind of like one reason why that didn't happen, because you needed the news crew there. So he grabs the news crew, takes the road flares, goes up to back to the same meeting room and busts right in. And he manages to out calm the con man. He steps up his game to be like, you know, hey, you know, why don't you just save all these people's jobs? And then it's revealed after this point that when after Zelensky agrees to it, because even he says as he signs, like, you know,
I own yeah. the company anyway, so guys,
no, I'm gonna own the company in a couple minutes, so it doesn't really matter. But it just gives him good publicity, because I think that was the other thing that gets Zelensky's character, like, oh, I'm this great businessman, but you know, I'm gonna act this way in front of a camera. So he gets a camera in front of him, and that's like, okay, that's when he has to put on the I'm Zelensky, you know, car parts for the American working man, because that's who I am, and that's who I care about. So he has to pull, he has to push that shtick. And after the news crews leave, you know, they're like, hey, you're not supposed to be here, you know, you're not even an owner. And like, well, neither are you two. You guys shouldn't be here. The marriage wasn't legal.
Boom. The Maury, you're not the father moment.
Pretty much.
Lie detector results.
And Bo Derek pretty much throws Paul under the bus, like, fucking, I don't know what they're talking about. I mean, she kind of admits to it to an extent, but you know, Paul goes crazy and he runs out and then ends up getting tripped
up. Nailed in the fucking nuts with a
sandbag.
Yeah. And then of course the all the happy feelings happen. The he saves the company, saves the town, he gets the girl, he kisses her, and then he does his little speech at the end, and everybody goes home happy except for Paul.
And then
even he gets a little wine bottle from Zelensky saying, you know, sorry about your nuts or whatever.
Cool off your nuts.
Get drunk on me, your seat.
Yeah, so everybody kind of leaves on a happy note.
And then the final scene is going back to the boat where he's talking to his dad.
Yeah.
Another great acting moment. And then, but of course the sail hits him in the head.
Yeah, goes, it's punctuated by some like slapstick.
It's always followed by some stupidness. Yeah. That kind of leaves the a lighthearted moment. Yeah. So, end of movie. We'll start with Phil. Let's get your quick overall thoughts and your score on 10.
So, I wasn't a big Chris Farley fan back then. I've grown to like appreciate his style more with the years. He really sells this movie because it's not based on like Shaw Factory. He actually gets to the heart of something. You're actually laughing with the character and not at him, which is really hard to do in comedy. So he really pulls off this sympathetic, pretty much like an idiot, but you're not disgusted by him. You're kind of rooting for him. So overall, I'd give this movie 7 out of 10.
Before Heavy gives his his results, because this is kind of more his pick, I'm going to give mine, actually. I find that comedy doesn't really hold up for me. I was a huge fan of Farley back in the day when it was him, David Spade, Adam Sandler, Mike Myers doing the SNL stuff. And, you know, like there's a couple of skits. One's like the Chippendale Dancers, the Matt Foley. You know, like there's a lot of stuff that I remember loving. And I remember watching this, you know, 15 years ago, really enjoying it. I find for me, the humor doesn't hold up as much. It is a feel good story. And there were some scenes where I actually was laughing. It was like, especially the airplane bathroom and stuff. It was crazy. But there was some stuff I came off to me as cheesy. And it kind of fell off for me a bit. But I still do love the back and forth between Sandler and Spade. I find these guys are just like brothers from another mother. They work really well off each other. And I find the movie got a lot better once they were interacting, when instead of kind of just Chris Farley doing his shtick. So I'm going to give it a 7 as well. But yeah, overall, I find it did drop off in terms of like the funny for me over the years. Heavy set. 10?
I rarely give 10s. I think this for me is, I mean, personally, it's a 10. But if I'm going to rate it as a film, it's, you know, probably about a 8, 8.5. But it's an early 90s movie. And a lot of those comedies at the time, like Billy Madison and stuff that wanted to fit inside this type of genre of comedy, it fits. I think it fits kind of perfectly without having I don't think there was a lot of name recognition at the time. Farley was one of those newer characters. It's kind of similar to saying Bill Hader was a name in the movie that he did with Schumer.
Right.
But because technically, yeah, he came from SNL, but how many people really, really loved him and followed him in SNL besides myself? He's one of my...
The only thing I know Hader from, apart from SNL, is those Verizon commercials.
There's Verizon commercials. He's the main character in Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs. He did a lot of voice work. Yeah. Also in Inside Out, but it's like saying that he was like name recognition for that movie. It's the same thing with Tommy Boy. I don't think David Spade and Chris Farley were that big of names at the time and that they were kind of taking a gamble on it. And I think their careers both got really blew up at that time after this movie.
You can see, especially with Spade, because Spade is known even now as like to be with Chris Farley. Him on his own, I mean, yeah, I don't know, yeah, Joe Dirt or whatever, but like, you know, he hasn't been really doing too much apart from maybe being some TV shows nobody watches, but in my opinion.
Yeah, he's the type of comic that needs to play off of someone. And
yeah.
Chris Farley was the perfect person because Chris Farley is so much larger than life and takes up like so much space in the scene that David Spade just like, he just has to react and it's totally fine.
Yeah, and just his natural reactions to Farley, mm-hmm. you know, calling him a fucking idiot.
Or all the fat jokes, like, oh, does this thing look, make me look fat? It's like, no, it's
your face. That was fucking great.
Yeah, but to me, this fits that early 90s comedy. It's a lot better than a lot of the movies that got put out after this. Not in the comedy genre, but I've really gotten done like a lot of early 90s movies and how like some of the CGIs in those movies have like you want to talk about not being able to last and surpass time and everything, it's a lot of those movies because CGI just went totally haywire. And this is one of those movies that obviously didn't need CGI, but it was before that time and things might not be the same, but I don't know. I've always loved this movie. And like I said, I think this is what really introduced me to Chris Farley. I didn't know that much about him. Something made me want to watch it as a kid. We got it on pay-per-view at the time and I completely fell in love with Chris Farley after that point. And nothing that he has done other than anything in SNL, I think, can surpass Tommy Boy. What he ended up leaving, because he might have surpassed it later on. But Tommy Boy was organic, and they even tried with Black Sheep. But the mm-hmm. problem is, Black Sheep wasn't organic. This was.
Black Sheep was just a rehash of this.
Yeah, in so many words.
I think where it falls apart later in his career is when he did when he relied too much on the physical stuff.
It's going back to his book. They explain a lot. It was basically he was handcuffed to do Black Sheep because he was signed a two movie deal with Paramount, and they just wanted to go back to the well and do Tommy Boy 2. In so many words, Beverly Hills Ninja. It was more of a kids movie. And if you really look at it, I mean that's mm-hmm. the biggest appeal to it, and that's kind of why he did it. What other movie of his am I missing?
Because he was apparently gonna be Fatty Arbuckle, right?
Yeah, he's gonna be Fatty Arbuckle because
he was taking it really seriously too.
Yeah, that I believe that's he was going on a one last drug binge, and that's what ended up killing him because he wanted to go completely sober, straight and narrow, and the whole life of Fatty Arbuckle like mirrored his, and that's why he wanted to do it. And also, he was going to be Shrek. They have, and that we talked about earlier before on the show about how they
we played one of the scenes. Yeah,
yeah, they actually did voice work, and it was, I don't know if it was going to be a completely different movie, but I know they had to scrap certain things, and that's why, you know, there's such a big time difference between his death and when it came out. And I think 2001.
I don't know if I asked you this hypothetically back at the time, but do you think it would have been as good with the Chris Farley Shrek as the Mike Myers Shrek?
I think you did ask me, and I think it's just one of those things that we're so used to the Mike Myers Shrek. That's a 3 or 4 movie installment, and it's not just the one. And that might actually, I think it delaying till 2001 might have made it a better movie. That might have been a completely different movie if they would have had Chris Farley just by time frame wise. But since they had to push it back for other reasons besides that, I think it just would have been a completely different movie. It might have bombed.
Yeah.
But
who knows?
It'll also, he might have had movies that come out in between that time that would have been big successes. So you would look at those like, oh, well, great, Chris Farley does this. And what's crazy, too, is that's what really helped revive, I don't know if a good way, the career of Eddie Murphy.
It did. It definitely helped, yeah.
Yeah, that put like a whole, it was a breath of life, but I mean, there were some good things that came out of that, some bad things, but almost saved his career. So it might have been the same thing for Farley. It might have saved his career. It's one of those things that's just really hard to tell.
Okay, so Tommy Boy, guys, check it out at your local your local Redbox, I guess, or your pay-per-view, or however you acquire your
Netflix.
Yeah. Is it on Netflix? I'm sure it must be.
I think they also played on Spike TV a lot lately. Spike TV in USA.
Yeah. So there are various. And you can probably buy in your Walmart bargain bin for like $3 too, if you look. Okay. So plugs, final thoughts. Phil, I know you got a new video game out. Let's hear all about it.
Yeah. Stories, The Path of Destinies. It's coming out on the PS4 and Steam on April 12th. So right now it's in pre-order. So my budget is running kind of low. So I need to eat. So please buy my game.
Buy his game so Phil can eat. Check it out. Steam and PlayStation 4. Heavy set. What are you not doing in terms of the podcasting world right now?
I'm not doing The Art of Wrestling. I'm not doing Austin's podcast, Jericho's podcast, anything on the WWE Network.
But what are you doing, sir?
There's in between the allwrestling.com week in review, which we're going into this weekend, which is WrestleMania weekend. And we have WIRX WrestleMania coming the week after. So be on the lookout for all of that. We have WrestleCast. I haven't done an Ohio Indie Report in a while. We need to do an episode if anything goes soon, but that might be mid-April. We'll see how that goes. NFL Easy Picks, you won't get anything until summertime.
Would make sense because there's no picks. No, there's nothing to pick.
Well, we have nothing to discuss. The draft doesn't happen until, I think, the end of April, and then we wait a little while longer for like a lot more things to develop and all that kind of stuff, and then a month or two before preseason starts in August, then we'll do one off-season show, and then we'll do like one or two preseason shows, but that's so much time between now and then.
Yes, and of course, we got some big news coming up for Trending Topics Network, and we keep saying brand new, but we're going to have some actual brand new stuff coming up within the next month or two, so keep a heads up for that. So for Phil and Heavy Set, this is Old School saying,
holy shnikes.
There you go. Okay, guys, so normally we do like an honest trailers thing, but we don't have anything for Tommy Boy. But what we do have is actually somebody clipped this, and people were saying as a joke, you know, if they did Rob Ford the movie, that Chris Farley would have been like the absolute perfect casting for it. So what they did was they actually clipped some stuff together from Chris Farley movies and called it Rob Ford the movie. So we're going to play that. You're going to notice a lot of it's going to be like very Rob Ford related at the same time. The Toronto mayor that smoked crack and fucking was a bumbling idiot. So we're going to play that and just think of Rob Ford while this is playing.
I'm stoned.
Do you have any idea how fast you were going?
I guess I was going about 65 tops.
7 miles an hour. And normally when I stop people, they pull onto the shoulder.
Spent a little too much time puking off balconies.
You're a huge embarrassing failure.
This town doesn't even know what's about to hit.
I just want you to know that as long as I'm around, I'm gonna bust my butt and make sure that every last one of you always has a job.
You can put 6 packs of soda in here.
Want one?
I'd better not.
He says, wrecked him, damn near killed him.
The whole car smells like beer. They're never going to believe I wasn't drinking.
He must be all hopped up on crack cocaine.
Wake up, slut! I can't stop!
Oh my God, it's a police report. Front page.
Sorry, Rob. You can't be coach anymore.
I love this job. You can't afford to be associated with any kind of scandal, especially one involving kids and drugs. So,
can't do this anymore, man. My head's about to explode.
Serve you with a smile. To cut you like you want me to.
Boy, did I screw up.
The town's going under and I'm out of a job.
But this isn't the end. No way. We're gonna show this world a thing or two. We're gonna show.
They tried to make me go to rehab. I said no, no, no. Yes, I've been black, but when I come back, no, no.
I want the one on the left. She's perfect.
I'm watching you. You got the time.
Rob Ford, the movie. Check it out in theaters. Never.